into the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. Very good, Dean TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Santa Claus is coming to town.
We kind of had to start with that because Santa. Santa's wonderful.
He's gonna find out.
Hello, Red vs. Blue fans, and welcome to another episode of the AfterBuzz Red vs. Blue After Show. Today we are covering episodes 9 through 12, and I think we can cut the intro music now because I can't think through it. Just kind of go, I want hot chocolate.
Hot chocolate with marshmallows.
It's 90
Christmas
degrees in LA, and I want hot chocolate.
I feel like that's mostly our Christmas, is Christmas usually 90 chocolate. Degrees with hot chocolate.
Yes.
It's California.
Anyway,
it's
joining me on the panel today is Alexis Red Army Taurus.
Hi. Oh, I was this close. I thought you were going to say record, and I was like, yeah, right.
No, that's the other show.
You can find me all over the interwebs as atorres890.
Megan Blue Army Salinas.
Hey guys, you can tweet at me at the Menguin. That's THEMENGUIN.
And I am Katie Project Freelancer Cullen. You can find me on Twitter at Kiaxet. That's KIAXET. We are taking your questions and your comments today with the ABTVRVB hashtag. So if you say that on Twitter, we will be able to ask your questions and comments to our lovely guests, Miles Luna. Do we have audio?
Hello.
Hi. There we go. We have audio. Miles Luna and Aaron Zek. Hey, guys.
You guys look amazing.
Hello.
Thank you so much for coming on today.
No, thank you for having us.
Yes.
Of course, having you back in, the span of, 4 days?
Right? Too much of me. Too much.
No, never enough. I actually want to start off with a question from Twitter because this one showed up in my notifications and I have to ask it. The question is, Miles, which person or character is your inspiration for playing Felix? And the question comes from one Rebecca Luna.
Oh, God. Mom.
That face.
Hi, Mom. Love you. Hope you're feeling better.
That is the best answer you can give, by the way.
What characters are my inspiration? My evil mother growing up with... No, I'm just kidding. It's the nicest person ever, and she'd bake you all cookies if she knew your address.
I was going to say, mad shade to Mama over there.
I can
there.
Pay my address.
Inspirations for Felix. I mean, I sat down and I took a long, hard look at who my favorite villains are. And, a lot of, all-time villains that come up are, people like Darth Vader, who's, super scary and stuff. I would try to think back to villains that I really, really love, despite the fact that I hated them so much. I think probably two of I think the top three would probably be GLaDOS, Handsome Jack, and the Joker, or
all of those make sense.
Yeah, completely.
All of those together make a terrifying amount of sense.
And all that stuff. It's you just want to hit them whenever they talk, but at the same time they make you laugh. And that was the goal with Felix, was somebody that you love to hate.
You succeeded.
I was going to say, I feel like I'm the only person that doesn't want to hit Felix, but, at the same time, I do hate him with, a fiery passion. So
I don't really want to hit him either. I just kind of want to throw him off a cliff and see what happens.
Maybe high-five him in the face with a chair. I don't know. I haven't decided yet.
half of my notes when Felix comes on screen are just profanity, so half of my notes are not air-appropriate. But I think that means you've done your job really well.
Well, thank you.
Aaron, same question for you. What are your inspirations for Emily Gray?
Oh, goodness. We talked about someone when we were... I feel like we did. The evil doctor... Well, not the evil doctor. The doctor in Borderlands.
Dr. Tanis.
Dr. Tanis was a big inspiration because he's neurotic, but he's also still, smart.
Yeah, she's the difference between Tanis and Gray would be, whereas Dr. Tanis was this woman who went crazy and became a social recluse, Gray is this woman that went crazy and just doesn't give a damn about personal space or anything. It's just, all up in your biz, inspecting you and stuff.
That is multiple flavors of wonderful. And we actually had a question from Tumblr. Thank you to everyone who sent in all of your Tumblr questions. Let me see if I can track this down. Yes, it's from Unfair Lawyer.
Nice.
Will we hear any more of Dr. Gray's wonderful psychotic singing?
I don't know. That's not my call.
I'm trying to think if we have any moments. I don't know if we have any if we have any singing moments. You'll have to tune in to find out. But I mean, if you ever watch an episode and Dr. Gray isn't singing in it, just assume that as soon as she was done doing whatever she was doing on screen, she went off and she just rehearsed her favorite piece.
Yeah.
Blooper reel. Like sawing someone's leg off or something.
Yeah. Just to drown it out.
Yeah.
Blooper reel material.
Yes, please.
That sounds wonderful. So let's swing into the recap, and I want to take this by topics because we do have four episodes that we're talking about, and going beat by beat is going to take forever.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Santa. We started with A Christmas Carol. We got to start with Santa.
I mean, I would have been upset if you didn't.
You, and I love that episode 9 was You Better Watch Out.
Yes.
That was pretty great.
So cool.
And that is the song that we started with today. I think you guys missed that earlier.
Yeah, Miles has a big boner for...
I like coming up with title names. Title and chapter titles are really, really fun.
Case
in point, Fed versus New last season was something I've been sitting on for over a year and was like, yeah, finally!
Why am I not surprised?
Chapter titles for things. Same goes for Ruby.
Well, for these chapters, we have You Better Watch Out, Temple of the Key, Dish Best Served, and Off Key. And I thought that last one was particularly apt.
Thank you
very
much. You're very welcome. Well, so, Santa. are you asking Santa? There's
a phrase in every after show that I just can't say. The robots in disguise as the squirrels for here at Santa.
Decepticon, of course.
Yeah, I know.
And the fact that he insists on being called Santa now.
I refuse to call you that, though.
Yes. It's wonderful.
I'm so glad somebody said it.
Sorry, Church, you're not cool.
I find the office really, really difficult. Because, you know, we're all tired, we're all, like, working really, really hard. And it's somewhat strange to go into a conversation with complete sincerity and seriousness and go, guys, we really need to talk about Santa. It's always like a, sorry. Anyways, yeah, the alien thing.
Well, it is kind of funny that Santa is bringing such bad news at the beginning of these four episodes.
Basically, that's happened in fiction more than once. He actually brings a lot of gifts. The problem is they've already fallen into the wrong hands.
Yep.
We have all of these temples that are, I wrote them all down, arms, weather manipulation, which is my personal favorite, procreation, communication, interior decorating.
Interior decorating.
The temple of interior decorating.
Yes, that's my favorite.
Bountiful harvest. So these are aliens who had a lot to give and didn't seem to want anything in return. I don't like that laugh.
Every now and then Red vs. Blue will, take some inspiration from the Halo franchise in which it was born from. And that was one thing I always thought was super weird about the Forerunner, was that they left behind just these giant, super destructive and powerful things, just, you know, in case. When we started getting to the alien storyline, I thought it was, again, a lot of the stuff where the story comes from the maps that we have available to us in the multiplayer mode. And seeing as pretty much all the maps that we hadn't used yet were alien in some way, shape, or form, I knew that eventually the story was going to have to go that way. I don't know. It was just like all the different temples were, the first draft of that script, they were all really serious. And, there was some that were really thought out. And I was like, oh yeah, it'd be super cool if they had this, super cool if they had that. But then it just felt kind of weird and boring. So then I was like, well, let's just give them some silly towers, like interior decorating. Fuck yeah, these aliens would have, really, they would feng shui it and everything. Like, I don't know. It was fun coming up with different temples.
Aesthetic.
Yeah. I can't remember all the ones that came before interior decorating, but interior decorating was my favorite silly temple.
Same here.
That's a pretty good one. And we find out that there is a key that will activate them in much the same way that we have the key is the sword is a key, it unlocks people's deaths. I'm a Kingdom Hearts fan, and that quote comes out so often. And that it hasn't been activated yet. So now we have a race for the key, and a trap going down, and our party's pinned. So it's a pretty good cliffhanger at the end of this episode. And we wind up with, I want to get to this, Doyle, of all people. That, to me, was an interesting choice because so far Doyle hadn't really done anything but tick off the world by disrespecting Kimball.
Yeah, there's that. I forgot about that. But, no, I'm actually...
She calls him general. He calls her miss.
Yeah.
There's a problem.
Yeah. But, I mean, I am kind of glad that Doyle got to shine a little bit. I mean, okay, maybe not shine. Maybe that's the wrong word. But, you know what I mean. Like, I'm kind of glad that he was more involved.
Yeah, no, this is the most impressed I've ever been with his character in this entire series, was this set of episodes, because it's the first time we've seen him go out into the field and be on the front lines, whereas Kimball's been on the front lines for ages and ages, so of course she's really short-tempered with him, because he's sat behind a desk for so long.
Well, and Doyle was a secretary. He doesn't know how to army, he doesn't know how to war, he doesn't know how to do any of
it.
He doesn't know how to war. But he has to do it anyway.
Yeah.
And so we got a lot of development from Kimball just because the first half of season 12 was all focused on the rebellion and on her and all that fun stuff. So now we're getting to see him, and now we're getting to see him have to deal with the front lines, deal with war, deal with the consequences, and come face to face with Felix, who at that time was doing his deep, scary voice.
All right, let's not stop foaming at the mouth, okay?
Just God.
Barbara, I want, thank you very much.
Sorry, that was my favorite line out of all four of them. Besides, like, I refuse to call you that. Like, those are, like, my top lines these past four episodes.
I have quite a few lines written down in caps lock. Mine has to be Wash's zinger, but we will get to that.
Yes.
Because that is... If I had a mic, I would have dropped it at that point.
I loved Carolina calling her the smartest person on
the
court.
Yes. Oh, there was a 50-50 chance. Yeah, so have we pretty much covered Doyle? Do we want to go into...
I want to ask, what prompted actually putting Doyle out on the front lines?
Well, one of my biggest goals for the Chorus trilogy was to make people actually care about the people on Chorus. We'd had the Reds and Blues for 10 years, and everybody loved the Reds and Blues. Everybody cared about the Reds and Blues. Every time Caboose is in danger, Jesus Christ, watch out. Like, so, you know, one of the reasons why the list of cast members exploded this trilogy was, well, A, because I'm crazy, and B, because I really wanted people to care about the people of Chorus. If the Reds and Blues showed up and met a few nameless soldiers and maybe like one person on each side that you kind of cared about, it'd be okay, but I really, really wanted Chorus to feel like a place that had been alive and populated and had its own thing going on before the Reds and Blues showed up. So one of the challenges in season 12 and obviously through season 13 is I never wanted there to be a good side or a bad side to the Chorus Civil War. You know, it was always, you can see the pros and cons that each general brings to the table in both, you know, the way that they behave as well as the things that they fight for. And yeah, like you said, we spent a lot of time with the New Republic in season 12, just because that was kind of the way that we wanted to mislead the audience. So it's a little bit of catch up for the Federal Army, which is why Doyle and Gray, the two characters that kind of represent the feds, are such loud characters. You know, they're not just... You know, the New Republic, you get Kimball and four lieutenants and then also Matthews and, you know, a few people here and there. But with Doyle, with the feds, because we didn't have a ton of time in season 12 and we were running out of characters that we could put on screen, I needed to try and be economical with our cast. So I decided to make them really, really loud and really, really strong characters. And yeah, now that we've seen how Kimball is this awesome leader in season 12, I really wanted the audience to get a chance to see Doyle's side of things and how he's not just, I mean, well, he is a weenie, but he's a lovable weenie. And I think the world needs more lovable weenies.
Hashtag the world needs weenie. More lovable weenies.
Hashtag lovable weenie, yes.
Yes.
So we do have a question.
My favorite thing to come out of our previous episode, our latest episode, is that the fans seem to be divided between people that think Kimball was in the right and Doyle was in the right. That's perfect, because there's no right answer.
Yeah.
Tumblr's a minefield right now. It's pretty bad.
There is no right answer. You know, people are hot-headed. People act, you know, by instinct when they're in scary situations. It's kind of just like a lose-lose, you know? And it's something that our heroes are going to have to deal with over the course of the next few episodes.
Well, and Doyle hasn't had the training to deal with this, and he has a particularly terrible arm because, wow, that throw was bad.
Oh, so bad.
Not the best.
We do have a question from Tumblr user The Meta, Nereal. So if Doyle had died on that cliff, who would have taken command of the feds?
That's a really good question.
Me.
that was literally going to be my guess. I was like, great.
The only other named Fed character we have?
Yeah.
I don't think anybody else could lead.
No, like, seriously.
They're a little low on leaders right now.
It likely wouldn't be anybody that made sense. It would be whatever the laws of the government of Taurus had put into place. One of the things that I wanted to try and show with the feds, which we didn't get to go into as much in 12 and 13 as I had hoped, was that the main problem with the feds is that they are a bureaucratic, by-the-book society, and that it doesn't make any sense. It makes no sense for Doyle to be the general of this army, but because that's how it was written in the Constitution of many decades ago, and they must honor this holy doctrine, and not holy, but, like, you know, it's sometimes the way that people will look at the Constitution and really take things literally and not want to bend, and, oh, our forefathers this, and George Washington that. They represent a group of people that are just unwilling to change based on modern times. They're just sticking to the laws that they had set up when they founded the colony. So it would have been whatever the Constitution of Corus said, that's who would have stepped up next.
It would be like if we had a civil war between Republicans and Democrats.
I guess
it'd be messy.
Yeah,
if the Republicans are win, they have way more guns.
Coming off of the rules and kind of the regimented background that the Federation comes from, why would somebody like Dr. Gray be on the side of the Federation? Because she doesn't seem to really care about rules and protocol.
She may have been enlisted. Yeah. She may have. I don't know. Miles is smiling and Aaron's smiling back. I think we have something here.
I just don't know. Like, I don't want to answer something incorrectly, especially with you right here. Like, normally I would just make up some kind of answer that I feel is right. If you're here, there's an actual answer. So.
I'm going to be checking the canon on your response.
Make up an answer because that's what we do all the time.
I feel like she was like that, but she had been put in such strenuous situations that after a certain point, she's broken mentally, and now she just does whatever she wants, because what are you going to do? You're going to stop me? I got some stuff. You want to see it? Like, we can talk back in my office.
She's doctor. You don't argue with a doctor.
She's chaotic good.
Yeah. Was that a good answer?
That was good. Yeah, there's actually, yeah, so we, not to pimp out the book again, but we just put up the Red vs. Blue guide that's now available for pre-order at redversbluebook.com. And that was actually, there was a scene about Dr. Emily Gray that was going to go into the season, but we just didn't have the time for it, so we had to scrap it. And instead, that scene, in a way, made it into the book in Dr. Emily Gray's biography section about who she was before she went absolutely bonkers.
Oh,
that's actually really sad. It's like really sad.
Well, and that's the thing with this show and insanity, because we also have Doc back.
And Hashtag
there's Doc 2K15.
Yes.
But he mentions, you know, being in a plane with no time and losing his mind and finding it again. And the thing is, look at the different views of insanity we have on the show.
That's
we have
so true.
Wash, where it's the worst possible thing, and we keep seeing the wreckage of that. We have Dr. Gray, where it turned out hilarious, but you can definitely tell something's wrong. And we have Doc, where it is a throwback gag. There's three very, very different ways to approach this on this show. Super interesting.
I'm under the firm belief that everybody's a little bit crazy.
Yeah, totally.
But there's a little bit, and then there's these guys.
And then there's these guys. It's a great way to put it.
I'm wearing my Wash shirt today. That's all I got.
I don't know about you guys, but I lost it when you hear the O'Malley voice.
Yes.
I was just like, it's happening.
Take two of these and call my other personality in the morning.
Oh my gosh. I was literally jumping around in my living room. My roommates were like, what is wrong with you? Like, it was just the worst.
How much fun was it to write for that?
It was a lot of fun. Because, you know, obviously we had this super long play gag that nobody realizes that Doc is gone, and we were going to have to resolve that at the end of the trilogy. So it was really fun because everybody knew Doc was going to come back. And I saw post after post of, like, it's going to be anticlimactic. Like, they're not going to do it right. And maybe still people didn't enjoy him coming back, but I think I've always loved O'Malley as a character.
Yes.
As like, a goofy, crazy, mustache-twirling bad guy. And I thought it was just the best way to take the audience by surprise, as well as get back a classic member of the Blood Gulch crew. We had a few people come through the office recently that had helped donate to our Indiegogo for Laser Team, and they got to see a few episodes early, and there was this one girl that was a huge fan of the show, and she got to see episode 10 early, and of course she jumps up and down as soon as Doc comes back, but then, like you were saying, as soon as his laugh starts to go into the O'Malley laugh, her jaw dropped. She didn't know what to do, and she just, like, shook very violently, and it was great! It's also just fun. I love Matt, as busy as he is, still finds a time to come in and record for Sarge and Doc and now O'Malley, and I think he had a lot of fun getting back into this character that we hadn't seen for quite some time.
So are we going to have more of O'Malley this season then?
Oh, you better believe it.
Yes!
Finally! The stage just got 10 times better. I mean, besides seeing your beautiful faces, but, like, just seriously, 10 times better.
That was an enthusiastic and unanimous response.
For the rest of the season.
I'm so excited.
I actually forgot to put Doc on my notes.
Really?
Yeah, oh,
that was the first thing I wanted to talk about. I was like, Santa, and I need to talk about Doc. Santa and Doc.
We weren't expecting either of them coming.
Priorities.
Hey, man.
Talk a little bit about what happens at the Alpha crash site, because I want to talk about Wash, because I'm horribly, horribly biased, and this was one of my favorite stupid things to happen this season. Oh, my God. He got Jerk of the Week for it, but I don't care. It was great.
It was pretty awesome.
It was a really, really great tactic, because it just shows that he really does understand the way somebody like Locust thinks,
mm-hmm.
and is able to use that to his advantage, and you really do see the difference between them.
Well, to an extent, the two have a ton of parallels.
Yep.
Locust does see the similarities, and he I think he wants Wash to validate what he's been through and be like, I'm a soldier, you're a soldier, we've both done terrible things because of orders. And Wash is like, no. God, no.
Tell me I'm not a bad person.
You're a terrible person. So it turns out that the mission at Alpha Site is a setup, as you do, because nothing ever goes right for anyone on this show. And they essentially have to find a way to get out because there's no way reinforcements are coming in time. Well, the ship's still there, the engines are still hosed, and Simmons can figure out a way to screw up the engines, give them a smokescreen, and get out. The problem is there is invisible sniper fire.
Yeah.
We all know who's behind that. And just Wash baiting him. Going, I know you want to talk, we should talk, I'm over here. Just like, how much more obvious could you get? It smells like a trap. Wash is not dumb enough for this.
It just screams, it's a trap. Like, that's the first thing that crossed my brain.
Well, I think Locust still thinks he's better than Wash at this point.
Well, yeah.
Especially after last season. So he straight up goes for it, and then the lieutenants take him out, which is just...
Oh, so
you just
awesome.
Got taken out by bitters. That's a low
wow.
point.
That's... Yeah, I didn't think about that the whole way through. I was just kind of like, ah, ha, ha, ha. Like,
just slow clap that sucker out. Bitters was the one who took you out. Well done. Way to be. And I wrote this down because I love this quote, and I have to find it. You might see our similarities, Locust, but you still can't see that between the two of us, I'm the soldier, and you're just a killer. Give me a mic to drop. I swear.
I would let you drop that one, but it's kind of expensive.
No, that's a bad idea. Hence the miming and not actually doing it.
Yes.
Because I understand that. But wow.
Is just drinking?
For everyone who's listening on iTunes, we're watching our guests drinking straight from the bottle. Is that vodka?
It's lemon vodka. It's
Oh, man.
Oh, my God.
Oh, dear.
That has to be strong.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I'm curious as to the thought that went into this scene, the trap and then the reverse trap. Was there anything in particular you wanted to do? Did you have this planned out, or was this just, this is a great thing, let's roll?
Well, again, we obviously set up this big. We set up a bunch of foils this season. Sharkface the foil to Carolina, Locust the foil to Wash, and Felix the foil to pretty much fucking everybody. Because everyone just wants to hit him in the face. But again, a lot of the challenges this season we're coming down to, how much can we fit into one episode? We just did not have the ability to do a giant crazy ice fight, as well as a giant crazy machinima fight, as well as a giant crazy Locust and Wash fight in the middle of a battlefield. It just wasn't feasible. So the idea came from the way that Wash and Locust kind of ended things last season, which was a battle of wits. Locust obviously has this really obsessive personality, and one of the things that he can't stand about himself is his human side. You know, all of these human emotions are huge weaknesses, and it's proven in the fact that he gets completely duped by Wash. I think really I just wanted Wash and Locust have another moment to kind of talk in the weird way that they talk, you know, over a giant battlefield. It's been a lot of fun playing with these two characters that, as you said, have been through a bunch of really crazy psychological traumatizing situations, and how they kind of play mind games with one another. It's something that's been a lot of fun to revisit, and thought would be kind of cool in episode 11.
Well, some people like to talk over coffee, and some people like to talk over murder. It just depends. Although
sounds like my Tuesday.
I know we're not even murder or coffee.
I guess I'll leave you up to the imagination there.
Six of one, half a dozen of the other.
It also depends on
the Tuesday.
Yeah. I know we're not even close to predictions, but I'm leaving this here. Rule of threes: next time those three meet, someone's gonna die.
Oh, I'm so glad I'm not the only one that felt that.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Miles just grinning like, yeah.
I like the words.
We'll see. Anything could happen.
Rule of threes. Do we have anything else to cover from the alpha side? Is there?
Just that I loved the Predator reference.
Yes!
That was awesome.
It was you Predator knockoff, and I don't think I can read the first half of that on air because I did write it down.
No.
It's just like, no.
I apologize for my swearing.
I warned him. I told him.
I forgot.
I think it's very colorful, and I'm excited, so it's
just,
all good.
It just means that we're going to be rated explicit on iTunes, but
just
I try
me,
not
just
to. Well, I try not to do it, because if I start, I won't stop.
It's true. It's hard once you get into the habit to break that habit. Anyway.
Wasn't it Red versus Blue that got us swearing that badly?
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
In high school, yeah.
Okay, that makes more sense. See, mine was South Park, but yeah.
All right. Different flavors.
Oh, yeah.
My dad.
Wow.
That sounds way darker than it actually is. Father, he is nothing but a gentleman.
Actually, you know what? It's okay, because I totally feel you. My mom has the worst potty mouth, so technically I got it from her. That's why she was okay with me watching South Park in, like, middle school, so you're
Let's
fine.
Let's talk about iTunes.
Yes, please.
Let's do that. Can one of you guys pull up iTunes on the thing, see if we... Yes!
I will look
for
that.
For everyone
race,
who
yeah.
has...
Oh, no, you better
oh,
go
Oh, boy. For... We don't need another race that ended so
but
poorly.
No. I'm gonna win.
Okay, for everyone who watches the show, who listens on iTunes, thank you so much for those of you who have rated, who have left us reviews. Not only does it let us know that you love us, and we know you love us, right?
You better.
It lets the studio know that we're doing a good job. You want to hear us talk about more soldiers in a box canyon in the middle of nowhere. And when you leave those reviews, when you rate us 5 stars, you tell the studio, hey, we want this show, we want more of this show, please keep doing the thing. So it helps us, it helps you get quality content, it helps us get these wonderful guests on who seem to be miming an entire conversation.
Interpretive dance.
Interpretive, you know, I'm not surprised. Anyway, thank you guys. And if you leave reviews, you get shout outs on the show. Do we have anything new?
We, June 8th, that's
close enough.
Okay.
It's been like 4 weeks.
From our good friend, Pyrotechnic.
Oh!
He says, great podcast. He's a fan of one of our other shows, or several of our other shows, actually. Awesome podcast with great questions from the fandom and the interviews who are fans of the show, the interviewers who are fans of the show as well. Thanks for making the RVB podcast, and keep making podcasts for RVB, Ruby, and any other Rooster Teeth shows.
Roosty?
Roosties. I can read. I'm literate. Thank you, thank you guys so much. You gave us 5 stars.
Oh, you are a good person, and people say nice awesome. Things about you. And if they don't, they should start. Well, he's also the guy who won the Optimus Prime figure on the Robots in Disguise.
Oh, I thought so. That was really familiar to me, and I was like, oh, look at you. Just
yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm going to bring it back.
You're making fun of me.
I think there's some lemon vodka in here somewhere. I don't know.
He's a fan of Ruby, Red versus Blue, and Robots. It's the 3 R's.
And you're just good in my book.
Yes. So we have a question from Tumblr user Jero, J-E-R-O, 1331. What exactly happened to Epsilon during the Carolina and Sharkface fight, and are the other AI fragments still functional?
That's a good question.
Yes, it is. Does it have a good answer?
I can tell you this. Nothing good. We have a PSA coming out next week, which I know some fans will lament over, but let me tell you, I love this PSA. When we do get back to our regularly scheduled programming, it's going to be something that our character is going to be dealing with. By no means are we just going to ignore the fact that that happened. It's something that's going to be addressed head on very soon by a few of our characters, and we're going to have to learn some more about it.
Okay, that's good to know, because we had a little bit. Sorry, did I just run over you there?
You did.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
What? No, you're
me?
In.
Oh, I thought I ran over Aaron.
No,
she was saying something.
I was just being incredibly clever over here to myself. You know?
Clever girl. I apologize because a lot of people didn't know who I was in the chat. They just thought I was just a random person. And they were like, oh, A. Torres, A90, you're Alexis. Okay. So
you said your Twitter name. It's the same
it's okay.
name.
It's all good. I don't blame you guys. It's fine.
I love you guys. Chat moves so quickly.
So, yes, it does. So there was a lot of people who were asking questions. I apologize that I was missing it. I was, you know, again, lemon vodka. I'm not here. So there's
all around.
So Alex King asked in the chat, this is a question for Aaron, are there any Emily lines that you improvised, things that you snuck in there that weren't part of the original script?
I was talking to Kitty about this when I was there. I think there was one line that I did, but for the life of me, I can't remember what it was.
Darn.
Oh, wait. I do remember.
You did remember it like 4 days later. All right.
you'll hear it. But I did once. It was great. It's my pride and shining glory.
Is that the phrase?
Absolutely not. he makes knight in shining armor with something that I don't know.
Pride and joy.
Pride and glory and shining armor. Yeah.
I don't get to
ad lib with Grace so much because she's just too clever for me. And I'm fairly certain she's just like making shit up.
I would not be surprised. Do we have anything fun on Twitter? We have tons of fun stuff on Twitter. Do we have any particularly pertinent questions at the moment?
We got one right here for from Cade Escobedo. I apologize if that is not how you pronounce your name. For the both of you guys, what has been your favorite episode and season to work on so far?
Mm. Ooh.
That was going to be my question.
That's a good question.
Great minds.
You want to go first or you want me to go first?
You go first.
Okay. Favorite episode to work on? It's difficult because typically my favorite episodes are the ones that I hated working on the most because they're really difficult. It's not just, you know, us working on it too. It's a combination of so many people. I think one of my favorite episodes that I worked on, I'm going to take it back to season 11, episode 18. It was the big shootout in Crash Site Bravo between Locus and the Feds and the Reds and Blues and Felix and Freckles versus Lopez Dos Bueno. And I think that is one of the episodes I'm most proud of, mainly just because that was an action sequence that was done entirely in Machinima. And I think it turned out really, really well. I remember Matt came out of his office. This is when back at the old office, I worked right outside his office in the bullpen. And he watched it and he said, You just did a Monty Ohm fight without animation, and I don't think I've ever been paid a higher compliment in my life.
Wow.
That was a really, really special episode, just because of, it was really just me and Kyle and Nico really working on that episode together, and it was a lot of late nights, and I'm just incredibly proud of how that turned out, and how we could take video game footage and make it really tense and gripping.
We watched season 11 recently, and it played out extremely well. Super impressive.
Thank you.
You've got this incredibly, touching and sentimental and thought-out answer, and in my brain, I'm like, I just like that I interacted with Caboose at one point. I think that my favorite part was interacting with Caboose with changing his firearms to, whenever he pulls the trigger, it's confetti.
Life goals.
You're like me too, where you were a fan of Red vs. Blue,
yeah,
and now you're part of the cast. Like, what's that? What's that like?
Season one, and I kind of thought it disappeared, to be perfectly honest. I'd watched it a long time ago, and I didn't know that it was still around.
That is a thing we get a lot.
Yeah. Caboose was always my favorite person, and oh wow, I never really thought about that. Oh, that's so weird. Caboose is my favorite character, as a lot of people did love Caboose. And now my character is interacting with him, and it's just really exciting. That's so weird.
I just thought about that.
You are living the dream.
You go.
You are living the dream.
Very exciting.
I think that's super cool. I mean, I would feel the same way.
Oh my god, yes.
I mean, a lot of people, now that we're doing the after show for season 13, for goodness sake.
Yeah, right?
I was talking to a lot of people who, like us, grew up with this awesome series, and then a lot of people kind of, drifted away for a little bit because they didn't know that it was happening. But it was fun that I can tell them, like, oh no, I'm doing an after show for it. And they're like, there's new seasons? Where can I find it? I'm like, dude, where have you been? Roosterteeth.com, let's go.
I remember doing that right before season 8 aired. I got season 6 and 7 on DVD, and...
And you dragged me back in. Lord Megatron over here is like, you need to watch this. I'm like, I think I watched this years ago. Okay, what just happened?
Yep.
Even just taking them back from the mailroom in college, I was running into people, and they're like, oh, what do you have? And I'm like, oh, it's the new season for Red vs. Blue. They're like, that's still a thing. I'm like, yes, it's amazing.
Were we watching season 8 in college?
Mm-hmm.
That's like, what's, how many, God, how many
We're
years ago
old,
was that?
Katie.
Oh, come on, you guys. Don't do that. No,
I'm trying to timeline it, and that is just a bad idea.
Yep, that is exactly how long.
Math. I'm good at it. I found this question on Twitter, and I love the way that it's phrased, so I have to ask it. From Jackson Morrill to Miles, so what was the point of taking Doc out of the show for a while? I just thought that phrasing was good.
I don't remember.
Ouch.
None of them can remember me.
It's just like them in the show.
I don't remember who had the idea, if it was me or Bernie. I honest to God don't remember. I think it was just the conversation came out of, because, the future cubes are something that we are understandably kind of ambiguous about how exactly they work. Kind of how in the first few seasons of Red vs. Blue, it's kind of ambiguous exactly where the show takes place, because on some maps there's a halo ring, on other maps there's not. Shut up, don't ask questions. And that's kind of what we did, because in season 11, Bernie was the one that had the initial idea for future cubes. It was, what if we took the Promethean grenades and made them teleport stuff? And then I kind of took that idea and ran with it. And when it came time for season 12, when characters have to go all over the place, because there are no human flying vehicles in Halo 4, we had to come up with an interesting way for people to get about. So we were like, oh, cool, what if we actually used the future cubes to teleport? Okay, well, that's a setting on them. And then we started talking about, okay, well, how exactly do these work? Because they used to be... Griffey even asked the question, he goes, how should you get people to teleport, by the way? Because we can only get them to use... Like, we can only use them to pick stuff up. We like to explain it as, it's just a setting they didn't know about at the time. But in the time of Season 11, it was, what would happen if you were to use this cube that's strictly for teleporting items and you accidentally used it on a human? And we came up with all these different ideas. And I don't know, one of us was just like, what if Doc just disappeared and no one noticed? And we thought it was hilarious. because there's nothing funnier to us than completely making Doc slime. So unjustified, you know. He's like, Doc is like the Butters of
He's nice and earnest, and he means well.
But nobody cares because he's just surrounded by the worst people and the dumbest people and the most narcissistic people. That he's just this good guy that nobody ever really pays attention to.
I do.
Not even Donut noticed, and that's what was really sad.
Yeah.
Someone was like, they farm together, it's a ship! And like, no, he didn't even... Sorry, guys, I sunk that one.
You
no special treatment, no special treatment. So the others who really didn't care for Doc, because if you recall, they've never really been fond of Doc, especially when he tried to kill them multiple times. They really have no reason to care for him. But Donut lived with them for a while. We didn't want Donut to realize he was gone. We just wanted to give him this, weird. I just feel like I haven't seen him in a while. What a strange thing. Because Donut's also naive and stupid. So. Just another day in the life of Donut.
That is a PSA I would watch.
Who else but Donut?
Day in the life of Donut.
Well, we've got another question on Twitter from Dakota, and I apologize. Anselmo, I think is how you say the last name.
You're getting both hard last names.
I know, right? Out of your Ruby and Red versus Blue characters, or just, I guess, out of all of the casting characters, who out of those characters are you most like?
Oh, God, I'm like Jean. Let's be real. Let's be real. I'm definitely the most like Jean.
Who am I like?
Are you sure you're not the director?
I think I'm a mixture of the two, to be honest.
Yeah, actually, you're pretty Blakey and you're pretty gray.
Yeah, there are times where I'm really introverted and I'm all about just hanging out by myself, reading a book, drinking tea, ramen, and all that stuff. And there are times where I want to go out and just be really loud. So,
ooh.
What?
You've also got a.
What?
I don't know if I said this.
What? All
right, don't take this the wrong way. Let me explain myself. You got a little bit of sister in you. A little bit of sister in you. By that, I mean you like to party. I'm going with that
one. You gotta say I'm a huge slut.
I'm not saying that. Those were your words.
Aaron, I think he just paid you back for that Miles is a good dick comment in the interview.
Well, I can see sister. I'm rambunctious and just very boisterous. I think I'm more like sister than I am like Gray, because Gray is smart. No. She's crazy, and I don't think I'm crazy. I think I'm just very excited. What did you just do?
A little bit.
I'm just excited and excitable. So I'm on both ends of the spectrum. So I'm going to go with Sister and Blake, even though I don't voice Sister. Shout out to Becca Fraser.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the option was open to all the cast and characters, and I have to say, Miles, at this point, I think you're the director. You are tormenting all of us without cause.
I think Bernie's the director.
Does that make you the counselor?
Excellent script, Mr. Burns. Oh, I don't like that. No, I don't like one bit. Second to Mr.
That's
Burns.
That's so weird. Oh my God.
Yeah, Bernie
needs
to be
Mr.
like
Mr. Burns.
Excellent.
Now that we have gone gloriously off topic,
oh my brain!
Let's go back a little bit. Let's talk about a freelancer. Let's talk about Carolina and Sharkface.
How great was this action sequence?
Let's talk about how amazing the action sequence was and how poorly that went down for some parties involved.
I never anticipated that we would ever get a luge fight.
That was
blue.
So
and then
cool.
The Assassin's Creed flamethrowers.
Oh, hey, that was my favorite part. I was just like, oh my God, what's happening?
On one hand, that's really cool. On the other hand, where do you keep the fuel for that? On the third mutated hand, he was skiing with them.
Oh yeah, okay, well, okay, I didn't think about that. But
if you look closely, there are little hoses, and I'm just saying, he's got a really big pack of something on the back of his Spartan armor. Who knows what it could be?
It's
probably
I mean,
but it was really well animated. It was a fantastic scene, and I kind of liked that Carolina didn't recognize him because he's all indignant about it. He's like, "You don't even remember?"
And I was just like, "Oh, come on, girl, get it together."
Well, you know, on Carolina's side, it was, but for me, it was Tuesday.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's what it is. That's exactly
Thank
what
you.
It is. And just shark face keeping up. I will say I laughed like an idiot when Felix called him Freddy Krueger.
I
lost
know.
My noise.
That was a great phrase.
And just the Luge fight and using
it was so good.
Using her willingness to compete against her, mm-hmm. making it a competition, making it a race, doing what the counselor advised him to do. So that came into play, and now I'm looking at the other piece of Chekhov's advice over here, which is Wash will not let himself be implanted with an AI. Mm-hmm. Epsilon's failing.
Yep.
I'm worried.
A little bit.
A little worried.
A little bit.
A little worried.
Just a smidge.
And we have Carolina overtaxing Epsilon, and I think he honestly doesn't know enough about himself to know what he can and cannot handle.
Yeah.
Because that's a lot for me to handle is very different from that's imminent system failure if we try it.
Yeah, because as soon as he said that line, I was like, this isn't going to end well, like, right off the bat.
He's still trying too hard to be Church and not being Epsilon, and that's going to...
Well,
and we have a question that plays into this, and I think it's interesting. Malachroma on Tumblr asks, just how long has the This Is the Story of How I Died plotline been planned? Has it been outlined since before Chorus, or is it a bit more recent?
That's a tough question, and I feel like I can't answer it without shaping the way that you're going to view the rest of the season. It's kind of hard to explain.
But
unfortunately, that's a question I'm just going to be like, nope.
So bring it back around for the season finale.
Sure.
Okay, remember that, Malachroma. Send it back in later because I will not remember that however many weeks from now.
I'm assuming Malachroma's a woman. I'm sorry if it isn't. But they're like, I'm always worried about Wash, so I feel Katie, is what they put. Like, she even said, hey, that's me.
Worried about Wash, the life.
Well, that should be on a shirt.
And I have to say, it's kind of heartbreaking seeing each of the AI fragments.
Oh my god!
Share, because we've already lost them once before.
Oh no! Don't bring
and
that
back
up.
Seeing them shatter right before our eyes, all over again. It's like, oh no, it's happening again. I can't.
This is the same season where we had freelancer flashbacks in the testing grounds.
No, this whole season is
just like, did you need those heartstrings? No, you didn't.
We'll just yank them out.
Yeah.
I have a lot. We have a lot of questions.
Well, we also have a little bit more to cover before we get to that.
I feel bad. I'm sorry, guys. I know you guys have a lot of questions, but we still have, what, 2 more episodes left?
One-ish, kind of. 2 topics.
Yeah.
So we know that Epsilon is functional because we had almost an anticlimactic shot of him just sitting there being like, well, she's going to be angry when she wakes up. It's like, all of that and you're back?
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be Sigma.
Yeah.
I was banking on Sigma. He's just staring at me.
Just crickets. I think I hear crickets in the background.
Something like that.
I thought it was a good choice, actually, because it was...
Because
even though we're dealing with consequences of the previous episode, it was a moment of levity. And that's something Red vs. Blue does really well, that it's always done really well, is giving us those moments of levity. It's still serious and it's still dark.
Yes.
But it was... It was really kind of funny to just see him sitting there, and because then you know she's okay, especially after seeing him
and
disappear
when she wakes up.
And her fall off a cliff.
Yeah, I
so
thought
we
that
don't
was
even
it.
Know if she's alive at the end of that episode. So I thought it was a really good, like, okay, we're gonna ease them back into it this episode.
And the fact that it's a when she wakes up, not an if.
Yeah.
So you're right. We did need that moment of levity, but Wash fan, I like everything super ridiculously dramatic. You know this. We've hosted together long enough. But
that's always been the hardest line to walk, is the balance between like drama and comedy with the show, because you know you can't take a show that started as a comedy and make it completely 100% dramatic. However, over the years, people after the Freelancer saga have come to expect this level of tension and high stakes stuff. So that's always one of the hardest things to deal with.
But that's the one thing that I will always take away from this whole series is that you guys do that very well.
Yeah.
And I tell people that all the time, because I know obviously I'm rewatching all the seasons literally from season 1 to now, just because why not? And watching the first season on Netflix to watching it now is completely different. But the fact that we can balance it out to the point where you can have enough comedy and enough drama to the point where I'm sitting at the edge of my seat, nails in my mouth, like, who's going to die next, kind of Game of Thrones kind of style, is just, it's perfect. And that's, I have to commend everybody on your team for that.
This is hilarious, but I'm crying.
Yeah.
All right.
Go ahead.
So we just essentially have the end of this last episode to talk about with the showdown between Kimball and Doyle, because talk about things not going well.
Ouch.
And this is kind of mid-season, isn't it? We have 20, 24-ish episodes-ish?
Yeah.
We're definitely in the mid-season zone.
Okay.
So this is kind of a nice little moment in the action to just stop, take a breather. We have the moment of the feds and the news really do need to unite because, you know, a house divided unto itself cannot stand, da-da-da. So,
nice.
Things I pull out of
nowhere.
Hey, man.
Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
I need to watch that movie again.
It's been a while.
I know.
And we have that exemplified in their leaders, because if the leaders don't get along, what motivation do the soldiers have to do it? And we actually got that an episode earlier, two episodes earlier, with the Republic soldier who was hunkered down, and the Fed soldier wants to join him in cover. You can join over my dead body, and then he gets shot. And on one hand, it's like, yep, there it is. And on the other hand, it's like, oh, yeah, there it is.
It's not good. I also liked when the medic came over.
Oh my god, those were the game grumps, I think.
My lap.
The unnamed purple medic is back. Does she get a name? Miles, tell me she has a name.
She's Private First Class Super Medic Susie.
I will call her that.
Private First Class Super Medic Susie.
That whole scene had been something that I've been sitting on for a really long time. It must have been early RVB 12. I went to Jordan Sweers at a house party. I had this conversation with Gavin, and we were talking about action movies, and I was like, has anybody ever said, like, they got shot in the lap? And it became this whole conversation that apparently made it onto the podcast, too, because everybody was like, oh, man, sick shout-out to that Gavin reference. I was like, what the hell are they talking about? That was Gavin. Our stupid house party conversation. It was like something that's like, it was a really dumb line that almost went into season 12, but then there was no spot to put it in. So then when this whole thing came up, it worked out really well. And I wanted, we're a bunch of big fans of the Game Grumps. And when they agreed to cameo in the show, I definitely wanted to make sure that they got funny lines because they're really funny people. I also didn't want to give them like something really, really serious if they'd been away from RVB for a while and then came back to it. I'm like, what is this soap opera? But no, it was really exciting to get Kevin, Barry, Susie, Ross, Danny, and Aaron all got lines out that episode, and they were really awesome about it. So shout out to you guys. Thank you.
Nice. Well, we're getting the signal to wrap up soon, so we have two forces divided that need to come together. We have Carolina, who's injured, and we have Epsilon, who is not telling people what's wrong with him. So.
Yep.
The churches are stubborn people.
You don't say.
And they don't have really great luck with snowy areas.
Yeah. Oh! Yeah, the grappling hook was back, and that was not good. And we have Wash babysitting adults who are acting like children, which is his life now.
And dish duty.
Do we have any predictions? We're not getting the laser light show today, but nonetheless, do we have anything that we think is going to happen? I laid down my rule of three predictions already.
Yeah, that was pretty much the biggest thing.
I think that because Doyle was the one that got the sword, eventually they're going to realize that they need to kill him for Felix to actually be able to use it. So as soon as they figure that out, they're going to make an assault on wherever Doyle happens to be at that given point.
And or they may go after Tucker, because we still have the Tucker and Felix rivalry going
That's
on.
True.
Nobody's outsmarted me and lived to tell the tale. It's a dramatic voice. Come on.
No, it was perfect. That's what I live for.
I would not be surprised if they went after them both, because we do have two equally valid keys in play.
Yeah.
So
another key? Sorry.
Yep.
Temple of Interior Decorating next?
Temple of Interior Decorating.
I would like to see what that looks like.
I would too. Like something in the extras or something.
Probably very stylish.
Hey, man.
And I think we're not going to have Epsilon by the end of the season.
I am laying that down.
I think
that hurts me, but it wouldn't be the first time Trish died.
I was gonna say.
It's a trope at this point.
Yeah, so it hurts me, but at the same time, I'm like, I could get over it pretty quickly.
Plus, I am known for predicting people's deaths and then making fun of them when they do die. Anyone who watches the Arrow podcast knows that.
Yeah, but this is Red vs. Blue. It's pretty cut and dry.
People die all the time, evidently.
All the time. Over my
so
dead
much
body.
Death. Any last predictions? Can we grab one last question from the chat room?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, here we go. It's from Jay Spradley again. Oh, sorry, DBZ King's like, don't kill Church. Take Griff instead.
Oh! Nope, sorry, Simmons will be sad, and we can't have that.
Going anyway, back now.
Continue.
If you ever gave the counselor armor, what type would you use? I guess that was to everybody.
Hmm. Oh, man, you're assuming I have an encyclopedic knowledge of Halo armor. I guess the counselor would have... Oh, gosh. I feel like the counselor would have...
Skip. Next one.
All right. Here we go.
let's go
for another one.
Let's come back to that one.
Like, really small, like, lightweight kind of armor, I feel like.
Scouting armor.
Or just so he'd look silly, he'd get the oceanic armor and look like a Big Daddy from BioShock.
Big Daddy! That's how I would feel
well,
about that.
Well, we do still have the meta armor out there somewhere that has not quite... We have Chekhov's everything here.
Seriously.
A lot of groundwork.
This is going to be one hell of a season finale payoff. And it is a trilogy.
Yep, this is our last installment in the Course trilogy. We'll be many wrapping ups.
God help us.
That's a phrase.
Okay, do we have
Tying
another question in the chat?
What
are we going to call it?
DBZ King 02 says, are we going to have any Doc/Gray flirting scenes in future episodes? Had to put it in there.
Approved.
Yeah, I also approve.
Aaron, as would you, Doc, would you?
Would you?
What about O'Malley?
No.
And the purple ship has sunk.
There it is.
All right, thank you.
I'm interested in, like, picking his brain. Almost literally.
I would watch that TV program.
I would watch that.
I am.
You think Emily Gray would be into Sarge?
Yeah.
Why is that?
I don't know. They just seem like they're both have...
They are both kind of mad scientists.
Yeah, they both have similar interests.
I'll build a robot once.
He likes strong female characters.
Mm. Hand me them lug nuts. Yeah.
I just got the weirdest shivers.
For good reason. Sarge was on point these episodes.
She's older men. Oh, wow. Then again, what? Maybe he's, no. We said the PSA. He's 17. Yes.
Nope, honey bunches a nope.
Okay, I'm just gonna exit stage left, pursued by bears.
Can I just say, I love when he's like, this is Colonel Sarge. It still makes me cry.
He was on point these episodes.
He was.
Dial 1-800-KILL-PIRATES, yeah. Operator, I need to place a collect call to vengeance, and yes. They insist on the slow-mo.
That was so
If it's
great.
Epic enough, life finds a way.
I love Sarge. He's fantastic.
Good timing with Jurassic Park, too.
Yeah.
Life finding a way. Anyway, thank you guys so much for joining us this week. We had a blast talking with you.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Yeah, where can the people go to find you if they want to have conversations with you?
You can find me on Twitter at Aaron Zeck.
Yeah, but YouTube, too.
Yeah, YouTube/AaronZeck, Instagram/AaronZeck. It's pretty much all Aaron Zeck.
You can tweet at me at MilesLuna24. And, of course, we're also on the Rooster Teeth website.
All right. Well, thanks again, you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll see you next time.
That just made my day.
Okay, for those of you who are listening on iTunes, you gotta watch on YouTube as well. Oh, my God, the Sandman pose there was amazing.
I know we're leaving. So I'm going to say my Twitter, but I also agree with K-Bits in the chat. Somebody tell me if Caboose is really from the moon, because I also want to know. But anyway.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Right? You can find me all over the interwebs as atorres890. That's Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, all of that great stuff. Also find me, if you like my face, at our sister network, blackhollywoodlive.com, for more geek nerd tech news. I talk about video games, pop culture, and all that good stuff.
Fun. So would Caboose be like a magical space princess in that scenario?
That's what I was thinking. That's the only way he can do it.
You know they have colonies on the moon, right?
Yeah, whatever. Anyway.
Space!
I'm Megan. You can follow me on Twitter at TheMenguin. That's TheMenguin. I'm also on a bunch of shows here at AfterBuzz, and I've started writing articles for The Movie Chick, Chick with 2 Ks. Be sure to check those out, and be sure to check out The Movie Chick Quick Reviews on our sister network, Popcorn Talk.
I seem to have killed Alexis.
I just saw tentacles come out of you, and you're like, space! And he came back.
And I'm Katie Cullen. You can find me on Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram at KiaXet. That's K-I-A-X-E-T. I am also on Snapchat at Kia Prime, and I send cat pictures because that's what I do. I've also started writing articles for The Movie Chick.
Yay!
That is Chick with 2 K's, along with the Megan, because we do that. And I am also on the Transformers Robots in Disguise after show on Sundays. Thank you so much to everyone who watched this. You guys
literally
are
everyone.
Fantastic human beings, and we will see you again soon.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
I need to place a collect call.
To vengeance!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.